All right, it's time now for second period. Welcome back. If you're discussing the topic of anger, I'd like to do just a short review of some of the things we discussed yesterday. We're in the middle of comparing sinful anger versus righteous anger, and we're spending time on sinful anger. People who were inappropriately angry at God, we looked at some of those individuals yesterday. Now we're beginning to look at some examples of people who were inappropriately angry with someone else. And there are many, many of these examples. And maybe a high-level takeaway is just how common this issue is. You can be inappropriately angry with someone else. There's many different reasons for that reaction. Another point we made about sinful anger is based on a misperception. This idea of looking at a situation and telling yourself a story based on what you see without maybe having all of the facts. And we showed the example of a bicycle, someone who was riding it, carrying another one. There's many different reasons why that person might have been pedaling off a bicycle. Ironically enough, I was talking to Brother Tim Anderson this morning, and he mentioned last week in Chicago, this very same incident with a bicycle. It was in the news. The headline here is, man claiming to be off the top, pinning teen to ground, reportedly accusing him of stealing his son's bike. This off-duty officer looked out and saw someone who he thought was stealing his son's bike. He pinned that person to the ground, I think a 14-year-old kid. And the kid was not, in fact, stealing the bike at all. To make matters worse, there's some racial profiling that may have gone on here too. We don't know that. But it just goes to show you can look at a situation and then assume something's happening when it may not be. And if that's the case, we don't have the facts. We're making an assumption, and we're going to be inappropriately angry. We mentioned these three individuals, Cain, David, and Jonah, who were angry at God. I shouldn't help them, but they were. And now we're starting to examine some other examples of people who were inappropriately angry with others, and we began with love. Let's just finish up there. We finished with this proverb here. We discussed the fact that Potiphar's wife gave Potiphar some wrong information, and Potiphar thought that he could rely on his wife. Unfortunately, that turned out not to be the case. And perhaps it's like this proverb here, like a broken tooth or a lame foot, reliance on the unfaithful in time of trouble. Potiphar was relying on his wife in a time of potential trouble. Well, I'd like to take a little bit of a segue now and discuss this issue about wrong information, because it's a fairly common theme throughout the Bible, something that we can all do even without thinking about. The heading here is giving someone wrong information about someone else. This sort of thing could be intentional, which it was in the case of Potiphar's wife. She intentionally gave Potiphar wrong information about Joseph to get him in trouble. But you could also give someone wrong information unintentionally. Maybe you're repeating a story that you heard, assuming it was true. Maybe some things are left out, etc. This sort of a thing where we're repeating something or relaying some kind of information to someone, it could end up being damaging to someone else. And in fact, that might remind us of one of the Ten Commandments, on number 9. What is the 9th commandment? Also not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And really, giving someone wrong information about someone else is a form of breaking the 10 out of this 9th commandment. We're bearing false witness against someone if they information that is wrong, whether intentionally or not. And the problem, I guess there could be many problems with breaking this 9th commandment, is we could commit slander and damage someone's reputation. The original last name was referring to the idea of a good name or a good reputation. You can have your reputation damaged if someone goes behind your back and relaying information that's not accurate. Now, what does the Bible say about slander? There's quite a few passages. We're just going to look at a couple here. We'll look back in Proverbs. What does this verse tell us about slander? It says, he that hides hatred with lying lips, he that uttereth slander is a fool. If you're someone who commits a slander, that's relaying wrong information about someone else, that's when you are a fool for doing that. Here's a passage from Titus chapter 2, verse 3. Context here is behavior in ecclesia, and the context is the older sisters. Paul here writing to Titus says, likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Therefore, all here is contrasting what is good with being a slanderer, which means, of course, being a slanderer is not positive. In the context of a deacon, 1 Timothy 3, verse 11, You'll see slander come up again as something that is to be avoided. Someone is to be, whether it's to be a deacon in an ecclesia, it says, even so, let their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. So slander is a criteria that is something to be aware of, and it should exclude someone from ecclesial office if their wife is doing this sort of thing. Paul also wrote to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 12, verse 20. He mentions slander here again. It's a fairly common theme. Perhaps it's something that human nature is very good at doing. He says here, for I'm afraid that when I come, I may not find you as I want you to be, and you may not find me as you want me to be. I fear that there may be quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, factions, slander, gossip, arrogance, and disorder. Slander is included in that list of inappropriate behaviors. So this is not something that anybody can do. It's equated with jealousy, etc. Now let's talk now about anger and wrong information, because one of the things that can create anger in someone is they look at a situation and they don't have correct information. Like the example of that we just showed about the off-duty cop tackling the kid to the ground. He didn't have correct information. How does someone get correct information if there's a situation that is causing them to be potentially upset? Perhaps we could also ask the question, is it even necessary to get correct information? It sort of depends on what the issue is. And so I'll give you a very facetious example here. What if you're at home and someone rings the doorbell and says, oh, there was some damage done on your front driveway. It's like, damage done on my front driveway. What could that be? If it turns out it could be something like this, there was a mosquito that was killed. Like, okay, well, that's really not that big of a deal. Right? But what if it's something a little more serious? It turns out to be your car was in the driveway and it looks like this. Well, that's a more serious thing. Serious damage to your fenders or your bumpers. The point is, which of those two situations is worth getting more concerned about? Obviously, the one on the right, something that's relatively minor. You think, oh, I'm going to get all worked up about this. Oh, this is a terrible thing. Well, is it really? We referred to Jonah yesterday. I didn't read chapter 4, verse 4, but the Lord says to Jonah, doest thou well to be angry? Is it really something that really is necessary to be worked up about? Perhaps it is, perhaps it's not. And this context here perhaps makes that point. Now, I'd like to relate an example that I heard. I was at the Finger Lakes Gallery a number of years ago, and a brother discussed the issue that we're going to discuss. I've never heard it discussed before, but I've thought about it a lot. I've seen this a couple of times in my life. And the example that he shared was something like this. This is an ecclesial situation. And there was a sister in the ecclesia who was married, and she was seen going into a hotel room with a man who was not a husband. Someone in the ecclesia was happened to be driving by, and this is what the person saw. They go back to the arraigner board and said, okay, this is what's going on. Now, if you're in this type of situation, it's frankly awkward, and you might assume something inappropriate is going on. What do you do? This is one of these types of things. No one wants to be in this situation. And perhaps it's the kind of thing that might happen once in someone's life. This would be very common, hopefully. But the point is, what do? You're going to have to get some kind of information if you want to know really what happened. That's going to require some effort on your part. Perhaps the word to describe this would be awkward. It might remind us a little bit of the situation that Queen Esther was in. She was aware of a plot to destroy the Jews. She's the only one that can do anything about the situation. She either has to decide, okay, I'm going to turn Haman in and let people know there's a plot to destroy the Jews, or I do nothing. If I do nothing, the Jews, including myself, are going to be killed. If I do turn Haman in and expose the plot, something could maybe happen to me, or maybe Ahasuerus isn't going to be receptive. What do? It's sort of like this type of situation here. Now, if someone does nothing, which means they don't make an effort to get the information, they don't speak with the person, that may not be the right thing to do, because what if there actually is a problem, a moral problem? Someone's salvation may be compromised if what people may assume was going on. This also creates opportunity for slander and gossip. Someone could repeat this. Oh, guess this person did, and I'm sure this is what's going on. Did you hear about this? That's not right either. However, if you do something, which means you try and make an effort to speak with the person, this is a situation that is fraught with potential for hurt feelings and just the possibility for someone to be offended if you potentially accuse them of something that they didn't do. It's like the kind of situation no one wants to be in, this type of situation. But what do you do? I don't have all the answers. And if you have some feedback to me on this type of thing, I'd be happy to hear it. But perhaps it's clear that we need to get correct information here if we're concerned about something, which means we need to have a conversation with the person here. And if we do, we have to follow the golden rule. Right? If we come across as heavy-handed and angry and accusatory, that's going to probably create a lot of offense. And you might think of that proverb, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. If you don't handle the situation in a nice way, but the person can be really offended if they didn't do anything wrong, and they think they're being accused of something, well, that type of thing can backfire. Well, what do you say? I don't have any answers here, but perhaps something like this is maybe not the right thing to do. If you're asking a rather direct question, it's kind of implying that you are assuming what the person's doing. If you frame it like this, if you say, why were you going into that hotel room? That man was your husband. It's kind of a blunt and direct thing to say. You could even be more direct than that. That could probably offend somebody. If you maybe frame it more generically, something like this, my peace of mind, can you help me by providing some information? I become aware of certain situation. I would appreciate you telling me your side of the story. That's probably a softer way to do it. But there's really not a great way to handle this type of thing as long as situation exists. And just to bring a closure to what actually happened here, it was the person's brother he was visiting from out of town. There, in fact, was not a problem, but you might think that there was. So perhaps the takeaway is if you were the person that I'm seeing doing this, there's probably some lessons to be learned. There was a poor choice of judgment. And maybe we could think about Proverbs 24, verse 32. And I saw and considered it. Well, I looked upon it and received instruction. If you're the person that went into the ring here, that was really not showing very good judgment. So if someone saw you do it, they're probably going to assume all the worst. Perhaps if you wanted to visit someone, you could just do it out of Chick-fil-A or some other place. Or that's not Chick-fil-A. Now, to segue back here to Potiphar. Potiphar was angry because of the information he received. It happened to be wrong. You can't really blame Potiphar in that case because he was relying on what he thought was a trustworthy source. He turned out not to be, but he was still angry. We can probably empathize with him. And his wife committed slander against Joseph. And perhaps a takeaway here is maybe we need to make the effort to go to the source if there's ever a concern, even if we think we're hearing something from someone else who we think is trustworthy. Maybe the takeaway here is maybe we really need to go to the source, just as a matter of courtesy to the person involved. But these types of situations that we might have to deal with from time to time, they're difficult, and there's probably not a really easy way to do it. I guess the best we can do is try and follow the rule. Will not be accusatory or inflammatory in our approach. We look back at this slide here of the man on the bicycle. The case of Potiphar and Potiphar's wife would be like you're sitting at a restaurant and someone comes running in and says, hey, someone's stealing your bike. Well, if that's wrong information, of course you're going to react in an angry way. You're going to jump up, run out of the door and say, stop, etc. Now we're going to look at our next example, which is Balaam. That's a slightly different case here. Balaam didn't have all the information that he needed to. So it's not a case of him getting wrong information from someone else. He was looking at a situation, he didn't have all of the facts. And perhaps there is a parallel here. Someone can look at this and say, oh, where are you going? The person says, I'm going across the courtyard. Well, that still doesn't give you a lot of complete information. Why are you going? Is it to sell the bike to get it repaired? Is that going to be? Would not. So the case of Balaam here is a case of missing information. Let's read this account here. And we're trying to address four issues in these cases. Appropriate anger. Why is someone angry? Are they justified in being angry? How did the person react? And what happened to the person? The case of Balaam here, let's read this. Now he was riding on the donkey, and his two servants were with him. And the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the road and ran into the field. And Balaam struck the donkey to turn her into the road. And the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on either side. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed against the wall and crossed the field and spoke against the wall. So he struck her again. But the angel of the Lord went ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down on her Balaam. Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. There is the takeaway here at the end. Balaam's anger was kindled because his foot was being crushed against the wall. And I've underlined three different things here. He went into the field, and the donkey pushed against the wall, and then she lay down under Balaam. Was Balaam justified in being angry? The answer would be no. The donkey wasn't able to proceed because the angel was blocking her path. Of course, Balaam wasn't aware of this. So this is a case of misinformation. How did Balaam react? Well, if we look at that account, he did three things. First, he strikes the donkey. Nothing happens. Gets more frustrated. Blocks her again. So that still doesn't do any good. Then he strikes her with his staff. And the poor animal, I have to kind of feel sorry for it. It's like, okay, I can't move because the angel's blocking my path. Why are you whacking me? This doesn't feel good. So then the Lord opens the mouth of the donkey. She says to Balaam, "What have I done to you? You have struck me these three times." And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you made a fool of me. I wish I had a sword in my hand, for then I would kill you." This is what can happen if someone doesn't have correct information. You get angry. Like, okay, you dumb animal. I just could have a sword. I'd chop off your head. Balaam is probably overreacting. So what happened? Well, his eyes were opened, and he's probably going to be embarrassed when he learns the truth, when he gets all of the facts. And the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. Then Balaam says to the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the Lord against me." If Balaam had known that up front, he wouldn't have gotten angry. He wouldn't have reacted the way he did. Everything would have turned out fine. So a classic example of making sure we have right information. If we do, we're probably not going to get angry. Now, we're going to do a group reading out in a second, just to kind of mix things up here. But first, to preface this, we're going to talk next about getting the full story. If we have an incomplete story, that can make us angry. Maybe we're missing key bits of information. Maybe someone tends to exaggerate something or leave something out. It can be intentional or unintentional. And in fact, it's possible to slander someone by leaving out relevant or pertinent information. Someone can relay a story and leave something out. If you knew that fact, it would totally change how you interpret the situation. If we are angry, we need to make sure we have all the facts, which again requires us to make the effort to get the correct information. What we're going to do next is read Joshua 22. This is the only account of the Bible I can find where people made an effort to go on a fact-finding mission. They were making the effort to get the facts. They were upset about something. It's a bit of a long read, so I think we'll try and break it up. Maybe I'll ask one person at a time if you're willing to read. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I just speak. You know, we're going to read in Joshua 22. I'll just provide a little bit of background here. The map on the right is the land allotments. Once the Israelites came to the promised land, some of the tribes were on the west side of the Jordan River, a few out of the allotment on the east side. That's the context here. And as you'll see, the eastern tribes, that would be Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben. It's actually half the tribe of Manasseh. They built a large altar by the Jordan River, and we'll see this caused a problem for all the other tribes on the west. So I'd like us to read Joshua 22, verses 7 through 30. We can maybe read one word of purpose around. Maybe we'll start at the back. Whoever wants to come, maybe Brother Sean, we can start with you. And just if you're comfortable reading just one verse aloud. And what I want you to notice as we're reading this is, what did they do to try to get all the facts once they realize something may be wrong or something may be possibly upset? Okay, so it's Joshua 22. We'll read verses 7 through 30. One question, John, I'll just make a few summary comments here, and we'll evaluate how this athlete's turned out, what was going on, and maybe what could have been improved. So Joshua 22, 7 through 30. Brother Sean, can you start there, please?
As the one half comes to that person that most gives possession of the passion, but the other half thereof gave Joshua, father and mother, to the side of Jordan. Joshua sent them away also under the tents. Then he blessed them.
He spake unto them, saying, "Start the frustration unto your tables. Very much cattle. The Lord has called grass and iron. Very much so cheap. Not a little bit in this with the brethren."
Children of Reuben and the children of Gad, the captain five of Manasseh, returned, and part of the children of Israel out of Shiloh, which is the land of Canaan, over to the country of Gilead, the land of the confession, whereof they were to possess, according to the word of the Lord by their name.
And when they came into the borders of Jordan, out of the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, they had the tribe of Manasseh above their altar, which is sweet.
And the children of Israel said,
And the sons of Israel sent to the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and to the half of the land of Gilead. Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, preached.
Written on the tomb of the chief men, one of the two fathers of Israel, who was there on the camp of the tomb. They came out to the sons of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half of the Manassas, the Gilead, and stayed with them.
They'll say to the whole congregation, the trespass of the great benedictions of Israel's turn and play this day to follow the Lord. And that your both you have altered, you have fell this day against the Lord.
Was not the Semite the Lord in the grass, but to this day, after this very day, we have not fallen sin, even though they come. They did not strip away this day from the Lord.
I was saying that my question being the cash bill and the bank of possession of all parties, all the taking possession of the government, fell against the Lord. I was going to say that's doing me well, said the public all the time.
Okay. So, and the transcendence and medical state, medical, which of the schools that man church not all means.
And it's really good.
And if we have not right the gentle of the fear of the sun, said in time of children, thinking to our children, son, what they need to do with the word of God.
The Lord hath made Jordan the border between us and you. Ye children of Reuben and children of Gad, be no part of the Lord. So shall your children be our children, cease from fearing the Lord. Therefore we said, let us now prepare to build us an altar.
But if then it may be a witness between us, you and our generation past, that we may do the service of the Lord before him our burnt offering, with our sacrifices and with our peace offerings. Children may not say, "You have your children, I do not have no part in the
Lord." Therefore, said we, that she shall be a participation of faith to us through the generations that have come, we may again take in and call the tattered and cause of the Lord, our father's faith, not for enough sacrifice. That your sacrifice, it is a witness between you, us, and you.
God forbid that we should rebel against the Lord and turn to the same from following the Lord.
built an altar for burnt offerings, for meat offerings, or for sacrifices, beside the altar of the Lord our God that is before his tabernacle. When Phinehas the priest and the princes of the congregation and heads of the thousands of Israel which were with them, for the words of the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the children of Manasseh spake, and it pleased them.
Okay, thank you very much. If you're online, you're reading Joshua 22. We just finished there. The reason for reading this account is because it's a Bible example of a situation where people made the effort to get through fast. The context here, the allotments of the tribes were given, and the Israelites were now back in their land. If you look in verse 10, though, the tribes that were given territory on the east of the Jordan River built a large altar, and that caused an issue for the other tribes because they assumed that there was some false worship that was going to be going on with this altar. Verse 11, the word got out that the altar was built on the land of Canaan. And then in verse 12, these tribes on the west side of the Jordan are preparing for war. They're thinking, this is just wrong. The people on the east, they're going to be offering sacrifices to false gods. How dare they? If we need to stop this, we're going to fight them, get rid of them, and that will solve the issue. However, the ruler has somewhat prevailed, and that was led by Phinehas in verse 13. We might remember him from Numbers 25. He was in charge of dealing with the situation with Cosby and Zimri, and that's actually alluded to in verse 17, the iniquity of Peor. That's what Phinehas was involved in. And they're thinking to themselves, we know what happened with Cosby and Zimri. There was a plague. You know what happened to Achan. There was some retribution that God exacted there. What's going to happen to us? We have to put a stop to this rebellion here. Then in verse 16, the tribes on the left, on the west there, accused the eastern tribes of rebellion against God because they saw this altar and assumed that the altar was being built to worship Baal and other false gods. That turned out not to be the case. In fact, the eastern tribes were quite insistent. No, we're not building this altar to sacrifice the false gods. We are doing this for what we think is a very good reason. And the reason, paraphrased in verse 27, was intended to be a monument to remind the western tribes that the eastern tribes were also given a land allotment and that they were going to engage in the service of the Lord for perpetuity. It was an altar then that wasn't for false worship. It was to worship the true God of Israel. So once the tribes on the west realized that was the purpose of the altar, they calmed down. There was no war. Everything seemed to smoothly from that point on. But if we were to perhaps be a little bit critical of what happened here, it's great that the tribes on the west made the effort to find out what happened. But they still were rather accusatory. They were saying, wait, what's this you're doing? You're constructing this altar and it's going to be offered to false gods. What are you doing? They could have said, what is the purpose of this altar without insinuating or implying there's a nefarious motive here? Still, they did make an effort to communicate and find the facts, and because they did, a war was averted. Now, if we had to rate the effort of Phinehas, we're not supposed to do this in the Bible, but if we had to give it a ranking, we're not actually going to do this. If you had to rate the actions of the tribes on the west against the tribes on the east, we probably wouldn't say it was terrible. We probably wouldn't say it was extraordinary. It was adequate, but they were still rather perhaps inflammatory because they were jumping to conclusions and saying, we're pretty sure that you struck the altar for false worship, right? Well, they could have just said, we're just concerned or maybe curious as to why this altar is being constructed. Can you please tell us why? That would be probably a better situation. You might think of this verse in James 1, and it says, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. There is a sequence there. If you want to become slow to anger, you have to make the effort to get the facts, which means you have to listen to what someone else is saying, and then respond. Maybe it's a matter of asking a few more questions just to make sure you understand everything. And by that point, if it is necessary to be angry, which it might be, then you've at least heard an accurate accounting of whatever the situation was. But if someone's making a snap judgment and it's like, you know, we talked about this idea of anger being like a match, you strike the match and it flares up. If that's what someone's doing, then they're not quick to listen and slow to speak. You might also think about the words of Jesus here in John 7, verse 24. Jesus taught, do not judge according to your appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. and judging according to the appearance. An example would be any situation here, if the man on the bicycle, he's taking someone's bike, why? Maybe he's a thief. Well, we don't know that. Maybe he is a thief, maybe he's not. Maybe he's taking a bike that he owns it for repairs. We have no idea. And in the case of the Western tribes and the Eastern tribes, they were jumping to conclusions saying that the altar, we're pretty sure that's the sacrifice to false gods. Well, that's judging based on appearance here. Just a little aside, notice that Jesus does not say never to judge someone else, but if we do have to, it's still not going to be very often, but judging based on appearance, making a snap judgment, jumping to conclusions is not what we're supposed to do. Getting righteous judgment requires getting all of the facts. So I'm making this point a few times, but I think it's important. We can tell ourselves a story based on what we see, but if the facts of the story are wrong or missing, then we're going to judge according to appearance, possibly become inappropriately angry. So perhaps the moral of the story is don't jump to conclusions. It may be a perfectly good explanation for what you saw. Now there are some proverbs that speak to this issue of jumping to conclusions as well. Proverbs 25, verse 8. Go not forth hastily to strive or to fight, lest thou know not what to do at the end thereof, thy neighbor hath put thee to shame. That's almost what happened in the case of the 10 tribes and the Eastern tribes and the Western tribes. They were preparing for war, but because they got the facts, then the war was averted. Proverbs 18, verse 13. He who answers a matter before he hears the facts and is following in shame to him. Notice how often this concept of making snap judgments are very quick to make a judgment without hearing facts, but appears in the Bible. It's a very common thing. It's like looking at a Bible verse, but you can have a situation where someone says, I'm sure that's what happened. I don't want to hear what actually happened. I just would like to think that I'm right. Okay, well, that can be a dangerous thing to do too. Proverbs 10, verse 19 says, in a multitude of words, there wanteth not sin. He that refraineth his lips is wise. The power of the tongue to repeat things and perhaps convey information that's not based on fact is part of human nature. It's very easy to do this. We're better off to refrain our lips or not pass on any information that we don't need to or that we haven't checked out first. The conclusion of these two examples here with Potiphar and Balaam could be something like this. It's possible to become angry if you have wrong and or incomplete information. We don't feel good in the process until we get the correct information. And unless we do get complete information, we can sin in the process by slandering someone else and not going to hurt someone. So what do we have to do? Christ-like approach is to make the effort to get the facts. And that requires mutual respect and maturity on both sides. What if you're in a situation where someone thinks you've done something? This has happened to me a few times. And they don't come and ask you about it. And they assume you do something. And finally, you get wind of it. You're saying, I didn't do that. Why didn't you come and ask me if you were concerned? I would have told you. However, it's possible for someone who's on the receiving end of this kind of thing to be quite indignant and say, you know, how dare you think I would do that? And, well, we understand someone's probably upset. Maybe they don't have all the facts, but they're coming to us to get the facts. And it's up to us to provide the facts in a reasonable way without getting all worked up that they thought we were doing something. If we did, even if we did, we should be willing to admit our mistakes and try to resolve the situation. But then if we're in the situation where we are upset and need to get the correct information, if we go in there with like guns blazing, so to speak, that's not going to end up and well. It's going to make the person you're talking to upset and perhaps offended. So it's just, I think this sort of thing just shows the importance of trying to be Christ-like as much as we can, following the golden rule. What if you were in this person's shoes? How would you want someone to talk to you? And especially if we're on the receiving end, someone's upset, they're not sure why. Let's not get all worked up and say, oh, how dare you do this? It's like, no, the person's upset. They're coming to you to get information, hopefully in a Christ-like way. Just try and respond as nice as you can. Of course, it's easy to say this, or to put it into practice. Right, so just to cycle back here to where we are, we've considered the example of people who were inappropriately angry at God. And now we're considering people who were inappropriately angry at others. We'll have time just to think to cover Ahab. Perhaps Haman. Let's talk next about King Ahab. He was angry for a different reason. He didn't get his own way. Have you ever not gotten your own way before and not been very happy? I have. It's part of human nature. We're happy when we go the wrong way. We're not as happy when we don't, but part of life. Sometimes you get your own way, sometimes you do not. Let's read this account here. Why was Ahab angry? This is the account of Naboth and Binder. Now, Naboth the Jezreelite had vineyard at Jezreel, beside the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And after this, Ahab said to Naboth, give me your vineyard that I may have it for a vegetable garden. If it is near to my house, I will give you a better vineyard for it. Or, if it seems good to you, I will give you its value of money. And Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid that I should give you the inheritance of my fathers. And Ahab went into his house, vexed and sullen, because of what Naboth the Jezreelite had said to him. For he had said, I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers. That made Ahab angry. He didn't get his own way. You might associate this sort of thing with someone who's perhaps smaller, but there can be an older person who doesn't get their own way. The way of going up version of what you see here, that would be Ahab. So was Ahab justified in being angry? He would probably mean no. He was the king. He was probably used to getting his own way. Whatever he wanted, he got. If something happens where he doesn't get it, he is not very happy. Perhaps it shows the problem of greed. How did Ahab react? He was sulking, vexed and sullen. In fact, if we read the account here, it says he turned and laid out on his bed and turned away his face and would not eat any food. It's kind of childish, really. Here's the king of Israel. He can have whatever he wants. And a small piece of land he doesn't get, and he's sulking and pouting. It's not a very good example of behavior. What happened to Ahab because he was angry? Well, how we know the account of what Jezebel did with the false witnesses, etc. And even though Ahab did eventually get Ahab's vineyard through slanderous means, it did not end well for him. When the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, Elias, go down to meet Ahab, king of Israel, who is in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth. He has gone to take possession. You shall say to him, thus says the Lord, have you killed and also taken possession? You shall say to him, thus says the Lord, in a place where dogs lick up the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick your own blood. It's not a good outcome here. He was angry and appropriately. He was greedy, didn't get his own way. He takes action with the help of his wife to get something that didn't belong to him. And God was not pleased at all. The outcome was the death of Ahab. Conclusion then, perhaps it's kind of obvious, but it's possible to become angry if we don't get our own way. I think we can probably all relate to that. Selfish anger, if unchecked, can lead to very negative consequences. And in the case of Ahab, it led to his death in a rather unpleasant fashion. We'll look at just one more example here, then we'll conclude for today. The case of Haman and also inappropriate anger. Haman was someone who wanted to be admired, and when he wasn't admired, he wasn't very happy. Why was Haman angry? Let's read this account here in the book of Esther. After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman the Agagite, son of Hammedatha, and advanced him and set his throne above all the officials who were with him. All the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to him. The king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down and pay homage. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down and pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. A very angry individual here. He wanted everyone in the land to bow down to him because he was second in command. He was Haman. And one person refused to do it, boy, that made Haman furious. Was Haman justified in being angry? Probably say, no, just one person. He was second in command. All but one person bowed down. Why would that make someone angry? Also had a problem with pride. He could have asked Mordecai why he didn't bow down. Right? We're talking about getting correct information. If you're angry with Mordecai, Haman could have made the effort to say, Mordecai, why are you bowing down? Perhaps he would have learned about the God of Israel, but he didn't make any effort to get any kind of information. How would Haman react? He sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. He wanted to murder all the Jews just because of the fact that the one Jew didn't bow down. It's a very unpleasant and hostile reaction. I don't know what happened to him. His goose was cooked. And Haman on the gallows, he had prepared for Mordecai. Not a good situation there. Perhaps this situation with Haman and his inappropriate anger might remind us of this proverb here. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. him and very much had a problem with pride. On first he went down on him, he reacts in a very furious way, so much so that he is trying to destroy all of the Jewish people and the land. And last verse, whoever digs a pit, others will fall into it. Whoever tries to roll a boulder down, others will be crushed by it. That's what happens to him with this backfire that he ended up on the others to get prepared for. Yeah. With that, we'll end here for today. Some other examples of people who are inappropriately angry. It's easy to perhaps look at this and be overly critical of somebody, but it's part of being human. We can be angry at different things, and learning what makes us angry and if it's appropriate or not is a challenge. And hopefully tomorrow we'll talk a little more about some ways to resolve situations that can make us angry. We have a few other examples to go through as well.